This is 105.9 The Region, and you're listening to Discovery, the radio show for podcasters. Your content, unfiltered. This is Discovery.
Hello, and welcome to Discovery. I'm your host, Cal Steiger. We have two more podcasts today which have been written, recorded, edited, and produced by students in the broadcasting program at Durham College. The first podcast reviews novels that have gotten a movie adaptation and talks about just how good these adaptations are. The following podcast winds back the clock on the greatest sports moments in history. First up is the podcast, Based On.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Based On podcast. I'm your host, Adam Osborne, joined by my special guest, Mark Dixon.
I'm glad to be here. I think we're going to have a great talk today.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
First episode. It's going to be amazing, I hope. Today, we are looking at a wonderful book written by Stephen King, a movie that has actually a different title, which I guess, you know, it makes sense because the book was actually called The Body and then they named it Stand By Me. You know, it's interesting. Like I understand you probably don't want to call a movie The Body. It kind of sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah, I think it was great for promotional purposes. And they, of course, tied it into the song.
Yeah, that's true as well. Love.
So it was a really smart marketing choice, I think.
But that's not the only change that happens. Because in this podcast, we look at the changes between the books and the movies and compare them both. So let's get into it.
Okay.
Story of the Body. So it follows Gordy, also known as Gordy LaChance. But, you know, his nickname's Gordy, and that's what everyone calls him in Castle Rock. A staple of Stephen King is Castle Rock. It takes place after his brother, Dennis, also known as Denny, passes away. I think car accident that took Dennis in the movie. But I think in the actual book, it was a military accident. So we find Gordy at his house with his parents. His parents are very upset over the death of their child, Dennis, Denny. And so they're kind of, you know, he was kind of the favorite child. Gordy was just kind of there. And Denny was his best friend, so he's upset about that. And now he's gone. He's stuck with his parents, who are all upset over that. He kind of doesn't spend much time with his parents. He spends his time with his friends, Chris, Teddy, and Vern. And those are the three other people of the story.
And I think that is the story of friendship is something everyone can relate to. And I think that is an age anyways where you start, because these are young, like around 12,
yeah.
I think
Gordy is 12 in the book and the movie.
Right. And then that is an age where you do start getting more independent and your friends become more important to you.
Yeah, you kind of, you know, you're not just like a child anymore who is with their parents. You know, now you're kind of like, I'm an adult, but you're not. When you're 12,
right,
you're not an adult. You feel like you're like the smartest person ever, invincible, and then you become an adult and you're like, oof, I was not smart.
When you look back, you have a whole different perspective.
When you look back, you're like, gosh, why did I do the things I did?
Yeah, but it's also an age, I think, where you start to realize your friends can be like your family. Part of the story is that these friends, they also have different issues in their home lives, mm-hmm. right? So they have that in common.
It's definitely a story of growing up, especially at such a young age.
Exactly. And because in The Body, the original source material, and part of this is a journey too, where they're dealing with the death of a young contemporary, mm-hmm. like a young person like themselves, right?
Yeah.
Whose body is missing at that point.
Yeah. So they, that's the kind of whole point of the whole book and the movie is they're going to go see this body, right? So they end up learning about Ace, who is kind of like the leader of this gang, who's kind of like hooligans, as it's described. They're kind of like these bullies. They kind of bully the kids.
Right.
But they end up hearing about Vern's brother talking to Ace about the body, and that's how Vern finds out.
Okay.
And they decide, you know what? Let's go on this adventure. Let's go see a dead body.
As you do when you're 12 years old.
When you're just 12 years old, you know. So skip me a little bit forward into the story. The kids are making their way to go find the body. And they have a lot of challenges as they're going on. The first major challenge was getting through, which I think was a junkyard. It was a junkyard owned by this old man named Milo Pressman. And he has a dog. And that dog's called Chopper. And one of my favorite things, I think it was in the book, but I know it was in the movie for sure, was Chopper sick balls.
Right.
And that's something that Pressman would yell at his dog, because he wanted the dog to go get whoever was trespassing in the junkyard.
Not a friendly man or dog.
Not at all. And so this was the first kind of, oh my gosh, Gordy, you know, he's like, he just faced like mortality.
Right.
Right. He's like, oh my gosh, the dog almost ate me.
Right. Yeah. That's a scary moment.
That flash of like, I'm only 12 and this could be the end. Right. And that's definitely terrifying.
However, in the story, and does well, at least in the movie too, is getting some humor out of these situations.
Oh, definitely.
As well.
Yeah. It might have a lot of drama and sadness, but it also has those fun moments. That's definitely what comes with life.
And you need that. It's true. It's a balance.
Yeah.
That's what life is like.
Continuing on after they get through the dump, they end up getting to a train.
I remember the train.
This is the most famous scene from the movie, I'd say.
Yes.
Gordy kneels down to test. No train, so they decide to cross the bridge. Then Gordy hears something. So he goes and he presses down again. He's like, oh God, there's a train coming. So he's at the back. In front of him is Vern, and then all the way up front is Chris and Teddy. Chris and Teddy are almost across. Him and Vern are stuck in the back. Vern's really slow. I think in the movie he's crawling across, which, I mean, honestly, if I was crawling across, I would probably do the same thing. I'd be terrified of falling off.
Right, and we'd never know what we're going to do in a crisis situation either.
Or your train's coming at you.
Yeah, you got to figure something out.
So, famous thing that anyone's probably seen the movie knows, he touches the track, he sees the train smoke, and he just screams, train! Right. And so everyone starts just bolting across, except for Vern. Vern's like speed crawling.
Right. He's already afraid.
So. He's already afraid. So a train's coming. I think Chris and Teddy get across, and Vern and Gordy are still stuck on the tracks. This is the second test of mortality.
Another life or death scenario.
Is this about to happen? You know, they're gonna be crushed by this train. And they luckily manage to jump off just in time.
It's not an easy journey for them, but that is what life is like. So that's part of the great storytelling is that Stephen King comes up with these different challenges.
Moving forward from that point,
right,
we get to the campfire scene.
Yes.
This is another major point from it, and this is really where it goes from these fun-loving kids going on this adventure to life is really taking a toll. We already know Gordy's really upset about his brother being passed and feeling neglected by his parents because Dennis was kind of their favorite. So Gordy feels like they only cared about Dennis and Gordy was just an afterthought. But this is where we get into Chris's kind of thing. And Chris, basically what he did was there was money for milk. And I believe he ended up stealing the milk money, but then he tried to return it.
Right.
And this is where we kind of see that Chris was trying to turn a leaf and do better. But when he did return it, the money wasn't returned. The teacher that he gave the money to ended up stealing it and still blaming Chris anyways.
Betrayal by an adult.
Betrayal by an adult, something that really hurt him. You know, he thought, you know, I'm doing the right thing. I made a mistake. I'm trying to fix it. And then, you know, this person in authority took advantage of who he is, his family, because they're not really known for this, the best family. Kind of that stigma of like, oh, you know, they're the bad kids. Oh, you know, Chris, he's part of this bad family.
You can get pigeonholed and you can be, especially in a small town, be judged by your family, by your circumstances, and it's not fair, but it happens.
We're to skip forward because there is a part that happens with leeches in a pond. This doesn't really affect the story too much. It was definitely funny for the movie.
Absolutely. It was a key scene that I remember from the movie.
Oh, I can't forget it.
And audiences love it because I think that was one that I believe it was in the book, the novella.
Yeah,
well.
It was in the book.
However, there you can imagine it, which is one thing. But yeah, the humor of it, I think, really
definitely
comes across in the movie. And you need that. These are some heavy topics. So those humorous moments are really appreciated.
Because in the movie, Gordy ends up finding one of the leeches in his underwear and then passes out.
Right, that
which,
is a classic.
Which, you know, really has that really funny kind of moment to it. It's a little break from the kind of sadness
exactly
that we've had, and that's going to come up. Because
yes,
after this, they ultimately get to the body. And this is where the final climax kind of happens.
Because at this point, but still an adventure, they haven't really had to deal with reality yet until this moment, right? When they actually find
the body. Yeah, it was all just the adventure, but then now they find the body, and now they're not just seeing their mortality, they're looking at their mortality. They're looking at Ray Brower, who, you know, he got hit by the train. And so this is where Gordy breaks down, and this is really where Chris comforts Gordy.
It's a beautiful friendship.
Yeah,
it is a moment where they have supported each other. It shows how they support each other even at this young age. It shows a level of maturity as well to be able to do that. Even I didn't really think of the mortality was something that a lot of us don't really think about that much at that age unless we're forced to.
Yeah.
So that was something, I think, looking back on it as an adult, you view it differently because you view the friendships differently. You view just the life experience differently.
Yeah, because when you're a kid, you know, you're this invincible person who's got all your friends in the world and everything's going to be great.
Yes.
And then, you know, as you become an adult, you find more about the world, life, and how both of those kind of end, right? You know, life ends. And sometimes absolutely. It's not your life ending. Sometimes it's someone who's important to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at that point, they're gone. They're not coming back. And that's one thing that Gordy really kind of sees with his brother is his brother is now just gone, not coming back. And how he has to really deal with that, live with that, and really move on from that and accept that his brother's gone, the one person that was he felt most connected to.
Yeah,
and he has to kind of live with that.
He has no choice. And it also deals with the end of friendship, which is another huge topic you don't think about when you're a kid. But this novel and the movie sort of give a flash forward too, right? Mm-hmm. About what happens to the characters and how they don't all remain friends
they
forever.
They don't, no. It really kind of shows how in life moves on and you move along with it. When they're looking at the body, Ace ends up showing up with his gang. And so in the book, Chris pulls out the gun and forces the gang to leave. But in the movie, they decided to change it to Gordy, which I think was not a good choice. Because okay. I still find Chris to be the main character, the one that really changes, the one that, you know, despite everything, pushes himself out of that place that he was put in and shows, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be that.
So you thought it made more sense.
Yeah, I thought it made more sense. You know, he goes from this bad kid that everyone sees him as to really, you know, opening up and being like, I want to be good. I'm trying to be good. I want to do better. And now he's like, he goes from that to, I'm going to protect my friends now. You know, it's like, you're not going to do this. Moving on, after they end up seeing the body, someone calls in an anonymous report. I believe it was the kids. I think Gordy or Chris. They call it in anonymously and they end up finding the body, which is good for Ray Brower since he died.
And yeah, his family will get some peace.
Some closure there.
Yeah.
But after that, really, the group was changed. Chris actually goes and prepares for a higher education. And Gordy supports him with that. As we mentioned before, the group really drifts apart, but Gordy and Chris, they stay close together. They both actually graduate from the University of Maine. And then we come back to present day Gordy telling us about what happened with the group after that.
Right.
And so we find out about what happened with Teddy. And Teddy was in a car accident. He ended up passing away in a car accident. And Vern ends up dying in a house fire. And then we get to Chris. And I know in the movie, I know it's on that he actually becomes a lawyer later in life. So he goes from this scene as this bad youth who will never amount to anything to going to university and becoming a lawyer. And he does die in the movie as well, in the same way, being unfortunately stabbed.
Right. But, and while it does show, talk about how Chris and Gordy do eventually drift apart, as happens in life,
living in
different cities, but not before they have a big influence in each other, and they do make it through through the college years at least. They make it into adulthood.
It's kind of where in the adulthood is where they really fade apart.
Which often happens. People get busy with other things. But it doesn't mean that the people who were in your past, and you realize that as you get older as well, just because you drift apart from someone doesn't mean that your friendship was meaningless. Friendship didn't have an impact on you. Mm-hmm. It can still, for that part of your life that they're with you, that friendship matters, and it can have a ripple effect on you for the rest of your life.
You know, friends will come and go, and what also will go is the end of our podcast.
That time has come.
That time has come for we must leave you too, as this is the end of the Based On podcast. Make sure to check out Mark at his podcast.
You can listen to my podcast, Pop Culture Mark. Thank you very much.
And
it's been a great conversation.
Yeah.
There's brought back great memories. Fantastic movie.
Fantastic movie. Fantastic podcast. Fantastic guest host.
This is Discovery, featuring podcasts by students in the broadcasting program at Durham College. Up next, Moments in History.
Moments in History with your host, Savant Ross.
Hello, and welcome everyone to Moments in History, the show where we look at historical sports moments and dive into their importance to sports history. I'm your host, Savant Ross, joined by some lovely gentlemen, Owen Loudon.
What's going on?
And Liam Stamp.
Thank you, thank you.
Let's make history together.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. So obviously the first moment I can think of, since I'm a big basketball fan, one of the biggest moments in NBA history, the 2016 NBA Finals.
Oh, that one.
Yep. So
break it down for us, Stephon.
So obviously, guys, you already know. Golden State Warriors up 3-1. Blew that lead. They're crazy for that. I don't know how. 73-9 season. Best record in NBA history.
Historic.
Yeah, literally the like beat the Chicago Bulls' best record. They're looked at as the Avengers, pretty much. LeBron's game-saving block, you know, the block by James, you know, that guy?
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
You remember that one? Yeah. I don't know if you guys ever watched it live or seen it?
I remember seeing the highlights from the game.
The highlights, right. What about you, Liam?
Same thing. I didn't watch the game live because I wasn't a huge NBA guy at the time, but I remember seeing the highlights following and just the amount of people that were chatting about it, just how important and, you know, significant of time it was.
Right. Well, I actually watched it live. I was in grade 6 at the time, I believe. It was 2016. Yeah. And like around the summer, and I wanted the Warriors to win. I was one of those kids who, big Warriors fans, wanted Stephen Curry to have all of his glory. And after that Kyrie Irving shot that he made over Stephen Curry, that sort of put a hole in my heart. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah. Wasn't it like tie game, minute left, and he just knocks down a clutch three?
Literally, they just made a play to get Kyrie on Stephen Curry, and he just went off from there. Just said, all right, you know what, this is my time. Curry, you're like no one to me. I'm making the shot.
It's kind of crazy to have a guy like LeBron James on the team and trust another guy to take the shot.
I know, like, obviously, like, he's had his whole career. I don't want to get into that, but, like, you know what I mean? And then, obviously, the aftermath of that series, which, you know, caused the Warriors to sign Kevin Durant, look for another big guy, you know, cry to the Hamptons, you know what they like to say.
Of course.
Which pretty much led to dominance over the past or next couple of years in that, with that stint with the Warriors. Yeah, you guys remember that when KD signed with the Warriors?
Oh, yeah. That was, like, bigger than LeBron leaving Cleveland to the Heat. That was, like, the biggest. Everyone was calling him a snake for it. It was crazy.
Yep. What about you, Liam?
Yeah, it was kind of a strange time, actually. It was a moment where, of course, I mean, OKC was convinced they could keep him. They wanted to keep that core together. They were like fairly confident that a series was, you know, or a championship, excuse me, was in their midst because they had young guys. And I think they had just lost James Harden at that time, right?
Oh, right.
To the Rockets.
Yeah.
So they were looking to kind of fill that void. And the new KD was the big player that he was. They wanted to hold on to him. But the Warriors, you know, I guess give them credit where credit's due. They have ownership that wants to win. And they identified a key piece that, well, we all know how things went beyond that. So they brought him in. People didn't like it, but I think it worked.
I was, again, still trying to recover from that 3-1 blown lead in 2016. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to moment number two. Sore spot for me, guys.
You
already know me, the Falcons fan. All right, let's go into Super Bowl 51, Falcons versus Patriots. Boys, this is tough. This is tough,
I'll be completely honest. I am not the biggest football fan, but I'm aware of the massive 28-3 choke.
That's the thing. You don't have to be a football fan to know about it.
I'm aware of
literally it. And like my mom, she told me she went to this park because she was in Atlanta at the time. She went to a gathering or get together to watch the Super Bowl. And I was in Canada. I'm in church. I'm like, because they have the Super Bowl parties at church. And I'm like, okay, this is great. Falcons up 28-3 to half. I'm celebrating. I'm happy. Lady Gaga halftime show. Obviously, that doesn't matter. But, you know, it was all cool. It was all fun. And I think I remember hearing one guy say, you know, once Tom Brady, you know, once the halftime and all that happens, you know, things can change. Once that coach Belichick, you know, gets in his head and tells him, you know, gives him the instruction, whatever, then anything can happen. And I was like,
anything did happen.
Come on. That's not true. Surely the Falcons close it out. We're Super Bowl champions. Atlanta's on top. Boy, was I wrong.
Well, if it eases the pain at all, which I mean, it's been a decent amount of time now, so I think that callus is somewhat healed, but
a little bit still hurts, but you know.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think it was less so an indictment of the Falcons and how they played, and more so just it was a good sign of the Patriots and their culture. I mean, they never believed they were out of it. They always thought that they were capable of coming back, and they did. So I think it's simply more so just showing how strong that team was and that organization was and how committed they were to winning.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that year the Falcons had in the bag. I watched because I wasn't watching football as much back then, But I remember watching the NFC Championship where they beat Green Bay. And I know Aaron Rodgers was that guy back then. So I was like, well, you know what? The Falcons beat him. They can beat Tom Brady. We're good. Obviously, he had other plans. And it added to Tom Brady's GOAT resume with a fifth Super Bowl win at that time. Obviously, now you know he has seven. Yeah, don't really care about that.
No, he's pretty secure, I think, in his career.
Hey, Patrick Mahomes, you know, he's coming up.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows what'll happen?
I actually, on that topic, it's good you brought that up. I think simply based on aura and kind of the impact he had on the sport, I'm not sure Patrick is ever going to be quite on the level of Tom. I think he's distant second. But I think simply just when people think of the greatest of all time, I think people always have an image. They'll have an image of Tom Brady.
Tom also has a much better story, doesn't he? He was like draft pick, what, 197?
Literally like the last pick, pretty much.
No one expected anything.
Pretty much.
But like three other quarterbacks are ahead of him on the Patriots. Yeah. They all get injured. He gets his time to shine.
He gets his shot. Yeah.
He never looked back.
It's like Brock Purdy, you know?
Yeah.
He might doubt. Who knows what will happen with him, too. All right, guys. So, moment number three. I'm sure we can all be happy about this one now. There's no sore spots with this. Mm-hmm. Kawhi's game winner in 2019, I think the semi-Eastern Conference semifinals. Yes, that one was a special one, guys.
Yeah, I look back pretty fondly on that one. Now, that was, in my case anyways, that was the first one out of these three that we've talked about so far that I truly remember vividly because I don't think I was actually, unfortunately, watching the game live.
Mm.
But I remember coming into class the next day. And obviously, because this is the playoffs, so this would have been April or May.
I think it was May. I remember that.
May, yeah. So I came in, because we said another month and a half or so before the end of the school year. So I came into class the next day, and there's a buzz in the hallways. I'm like, what happened? What are people talking about? We came into our class, and like, we're supposed to do in history.
Yeah.
And like, social sciences, whatever. But our teacher was committed to being like, let's reminisce first. Let's play the highlights of the game. So I saw what everyone was talking about right then and there, and I knew that we were witnessing something special.
What are your memories, Owen, from that game?
About the Raptors shot with Kawhi. It was what is it? I remember it was like, what, 89-89 or something like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, was it? You were tied at 92, I'm sure.
Yeah,
92.
That 92 was, or 90. I'm still trying to remember that.
Very close game. And then, you know, Embiid's on Kawhi, running to the corner. What is it? He shoots the shot right in the corner. And I'm thinking like, this is a terrible shot.
It looked like a bad shot. Yeah.
And then it bounced and I was like, oh, I'm right.
Four times, dude.
And then it's in the air and then it's coming down. I was like, no. And then it bounces again. I was like, good, it's going out. And I was like, it's overtime. And then it just trickles in. I'm like, there's no way.
No way. Well, guys, I have a story of my own regarding this play because I was in Florida at the time on a vacation. I rarely get vacations off of school, by the way, so this was great. It was for my mom's birthday. We were watching the game. She wanted to go to some store, and I think there was like 33 seconds left in this game. And I was like, well, I got to stay for this. I can't, like, we can't go. But like, my mom was like, I don't really care. She didn't care. I'm like, Mom, really? Like 33 seconds, who knows what'll happen, right? It was still a really close game, and I ended up leaving and going to that store with her, whatever, buying clothes, shopping, whatever. And I didn't have data on my phone by the time, like, 14 years old. I don't have it like that. Come on. So I'm like, okay, well, if I can just get back home soon enough, I'm sure, you know, they'll still have time to see what happens. So I think my mom looked at her phone, and she's like, oh, yeah, the Raptors won the game. Kawhi Leonard game winner. I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, I missed this in a game 7? And my mom is like, yeah, they won. Yeah, well, with that being said, let's look at our fourth moment. Owen, I know you're a big fan of this one. Jose Bautista's bat flip game. Yep, the bat flip, the famous bat flip, man. I mean, when do I even start? 2015, what a great time that was for Blue Jays baseball. AL Division, the Division Series Game 5.
Well, what is it? Correct me if I'm wrong, Liam, because I know you probably know a bit about this too.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, earlier in the year, we had a bit of a dust-up.
Between
the two players of Jose Bautista and what is it, Rougned Odor?
That was the following season, I think, because I think Bautista, his little bat flip might have agitated the.
You're right. That
the
was.
Beat. Oh yeah.
I'm going a bit off topic here, but yes. What is it? That whole game was a mess. That whole inning was a mess.
Oh, it was terrible.
The inning starts, and it was Texas because you know Texas was away, so they were batting first. And we, you know, standard pitch. Pitch thrown to the catcher. Catcher catches it. There's a guy on third. And the ball hits the batter's bat and it flies off. And everyone thinks it's a dead ball.
Mm-hmm.
The guy on third runs home, scores. It's now three.
Tied to three.
We're like, what's happening here? This should be a dead ball. Whatever.
Yep.
Bench is clear. Everyone's mad.
Tension.
Managers get literally ejected. Tension's yeah. high. And we get out of that inning. So now we're up to the plate. And the inning, I forget exactly the events, but I remember there were multiple errors against Texas, like routine mm-hmm. ground balls. They mm-hmm. fumble it. A fly out into center field. The guy misses it. And we, all of a sudden, we have a guy on, I think, what is it?
I want to say it was Ryan Goins was on.
Yeah. Goins is on third.
First.
Oh, yeah.
Someone else is on first. And yeah. Pieces at the plate with, what, two outs, I think?
Yeah.
And it was just the style he threw on top of it, too, with the bat flipped and the slow jog. And the...
Also, now we're getting to the end of our moments with our last one, which is Ray Allen's game-tying three-pointer against the San Antonio Spurs in the 2013 NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
You guys remember that one?
I do, and that Miami team was insane. Like with
yep.
That was the big height three. The height of the big three. That was Chris Bosh, that was LeBron James, that was Dwayne Wade. That was, in my opinion, I think that's the best LeBron we've ever seen was Miami LeBron.
You think so?
I think Miami LeBron is the best of his career.
2013 LeBron?
Yeah.
In terms of, like, maybe not specifically 2013, but that Miami era when he was in that big three, because I think at that time he was his most athletic.
Oh, yeah.
So, like the dunks he had, like the alley-oops.
They were vicious.
Like, yeah. he just basically ran things when he was out there. So, add Ray Allen to that team, and they were just incredible. So
pretty much embraced that villain role at the time, because I know everyone around the league hated him
mm-hmm.
for his move to Miami. So,
yeah, that that tension between him and Paul Pierce still lives.
Oh, yeah.
When he was with Boston. So
definitely.
We'll see how that progresses.
Oh, you guys remember, because there was a part where the fans decided to leave the game after, I think, before Ray Allen hit that shot, because they had no hope at all that the game, that, you know, Miami could win the game. And then when Ray Allen hits the shot, the fans were, like, recorded trying to run back in the arena, and the security guard's like, no, you left.
You left.
Know.
You're
yeah, you don't
commit to the decision.
Yeah, come on. Like, you're not coming back now just because you see your team on top. Like, come on. So that was just a funny thing just to see, because, I mean, I'm sure NBA Finals, those tickets were incredibly expensive.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, when you think about that San Antonio team, too, like, give them some credit, too, because that was...
Right, Tim Duncan.
Yeah, Tim Duncan. Yeah. Kawhi was still a young player in the league.
Yep.
Tony Parker's on the team.
Oh, yeah.
Monty Ginobili.
Like, did they have LaMarcus Aldridge on the team at the time?
Or I think they did. Yeah, that team in general, though, it was such a well-coached organization.
Yeah, with Greg Popovich.
Pop, like, he still to this day, I think, even if the Spurs aren't that good of a team anymore, they're on the up and ups. But I still think Pop has that legacy. I don't think that'll ever be diminished. But you can't prop up what Miami did without also respecting just the sheer significance of San Antonio at that time.
Right. Defensive-minded team, for sure.
All right, well, that'll do it for today's show. Well, keep in mind, these moments are all legendary in their own right and deserve equal amounts of recognition. But other than that, huge thanks to our guests for today, Owen Loudon and Liam Stamp.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No worries. Happy to be here.
It was great having you guys on the show and getting your perspective on things. Once again, I'm your host, Savant Ross, and this has been Moments in History. Take care, everyone.
That's our show for this week. If you missed this episode or want to hear it again, you can find all our Discovery episodes on our website at 1059theregion.com. I'm Cal Steiger. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more next week.
Discovery, the radio show for podcasters, exclusive to 1059 The Region. Expand your audience and extend your reach. Send us your podcast, info@1059theregion.com.